Welcome to episode 54 of the Cycling Europe podcast. My name is Andrew Sykes, and well, you find me in the French city of Chartres, very beautiful French city, very medieval, obviously famous for its enormous cathedral, which I've just been for a wander around. And if you've been listening to the previous two episodes of the podcast, you'll know that I'm on a pretty long tour of Europe. Started off in Rotterdam, came down the coast through the Netherlands and Belgium into France, following the Eurovelos 4 and 12 to Dieppe, at which point I turned left and headed to Paris on the Avenue Verte. And the last time you heard me, I was sitting in the middle of Paris, summing up what had gone on in the previous week and a half. Well, yesterday I caught the train down to Chartres. Remember, my tour of Europe, which I reckon is going to be about 5,500 kilometres if I cycled every single bit of it. In order to make it more manageable, I have decided that I'm allowing myself to take a maximum of 10 trains, a maximum of 100 kilometres each. So yesterday I took the second of those trains from the Gare Montparnasse in Paris down to Chartres, which was just under, just under 100 kilometres. Now, the route that I'm going to be following for the next 4 days is called the Vélo Cenis. It starts in Paris. In fact, I saw a sign for it yesterday near Montparnasse, and it finishes at Mont Saint-Michel up on the north coast. So that's the plan for the next few days. Having looked at the map yesterday, I reckon it splits down quite well into 4 days of about 60, 70, 75 kilometres each. And it's going to be a festival of municipal camping this week, I think. Stayed in the Compagnie Municipale. Well, I think it was a Compagnie Municipale. It certainly felt like one here in Chartres last night. And I've identified 2 more campsites, and then hopefully a final campsite at Mont Saint-Michel. And I think they're all municipal campsites, which means good facilities and nice and cheap. So that's the plan. If I manage to get to Mont Saint-Michel by Sunday, then I reckon I'm on track for getting round the whole thing and back to Rotterdam by the end of August, beginning of September. Basically, it's 2 weeks this weekend since I set off. So if I arrive this weekend, I think in the back of my mind when I was planning these things, there is no fixed schedule or timescale. Well, there's a fixed timescale. I've got to be back at work on the 5th of September, and my ferry's booked for the 3rd of September. But in terms of where I would be at particular times, I roughly said, well, probably somewhere in the northwest of France after 2 weeks, somewhere in the southwest of France after 4 weeks, somewhere in the Alps-ish after 6 weeks, and then hopefully somewhere near Rotterdam after 8 weeks, which basically leaves me with an extra spare week to fit in somewhere. So it's currently on time, on plan. The weather's playing ball. In fact, the weather, a bit like in Britain at the moment, is going through a bit of a heat wave. Today's the 14th of July. Not sure whether I'll see any festivities, but a good day to be cycling through France. I've had my morning coffee, I've had my croissant, I've had my pain au chocolat, I've had a good look around the cathedral here in Chartres, so now it's a case of setting off down the Vélo Cenis in the direction of, just walking over to my map, in the direction of a place called Nongon-Nongeon-le-Rotrou, to the Compagnie Municipale de Vienne. Develop a detailed PhD thesis on the responses that you get when you say bonjour to people. When I said bonjour to those two, she nodded and mouthed bonjour. He just ignored me. I reckon in the Netherlands nobody says hello. Why would they? Everybody's on a bike and you'd be spending your entire life saying Morgan or whatever it is in allo in Dutch. Similarly in the Belgium, very, very few people responded simply because they're, well, everybody's on a bike. In France, well, especially on the cycle routes, you'd think that more people would, but I reckon it's more prevalent. People say it more often in the morning. Now, there's another cyclist approaching me. Let's see if it works with him. Bonjour. Right, I got a bonjour from him. You might not have heard it, but it's 2 p.m. in the afternoon on my first day of four cycling along the Vélo Cigny, and it's very, very hot, and it's actually quite windy. In fact, I would go so far as to say of the 10, 11 days that I've been cycling so far, today is probably the windiest. And unfortunately at the moment, it's actually blowing from the northwest, which is a pity because I'm travelling kind of in the direction of the northwest. However, I've just checked on my weather app and it does look to me as though the wind is going to change direction over the course of the next 24 hours and it will be more from the northeast, which should be more helpful. Now, it's been a bit of an ecclesiastical morning after having wandered round the cathedral in Chartres this morning before I left, stumbled upon a medieval church in a little village in the middle of nowhere with some amazing frescoes. Didn't actually get a chance to go in, but you could stand at the door and look through the glass. And then I arrived in Illiers-Combray, interesting name, come back to that in a second. And again, there's the Église Saint-Jacques. Beautiful inside. The wooden roof was painted and in amazing colours. Now, I don't have a religious bone in my body, but the time and effort and skill of the people who painted, built, designed those churches back in the, well, the 1100s, thing, that kind of era, is just astounding. There was a stone wall which was built to shield off the choir in Chartres Cathedral, which was just amazing. The detail on it was just, well, beyond what I reckon even the most talented stonemasons nowadays could probably achieve. So hats off to them. You know, we think we're clever nowadays, having the internet and mobile phones and digital communication and satellites and rockets and goodness knows what high-speed trains, but actually the skills required to build places like that is really, I would have thought, the equal of the skills that we have nowadays, just implemented in a very different way. Right, back to Illiers-Combray. I'd never heard of the place before I went there about half an hour ago, and it turns out it's where Marcel Proust spent his childhood. Now, Marcel Proust, if you know anything about him, is famous for having written A la recherche du temps perdu. Now, I don't claim to have read that, even as a French teacher, but it's all about him looking back on his childhood in the late 19th and early 20th century. And from what I could understand from the information boards outside the church about the town and the name of the town, it sounds to me as though it was originally called Illiers. And then, when Marcel Proust had written his book, they realised that excuse me, this is farming country. There's a tractor and trailer just goes past. Anyway, back to Illiers-Combray. Illiers was what it was called originally, but I think somebody must have latched onto the fact that when Marcel Proust wrote his book A la recherche du temps perdu, he based it in a place called Combray, and people started to think, hang on a second, Combray, it sounds very much like the place he did actually grow up in, which was Illiers. So it sounds to me as though they've changed the name and now it's become Illiers-Combray. Very clever marketing, very clever indeed. Now, it is the 14th of July, and despite that tractor just going past a few seconds ago, it is really, really quiet on the roads, which is really nice. I've spent a few 14th of Julys in France when I was working here, or obviously not working here because it's a bank holiday on the 14th of July. Can't actually remember what I did. I think basically it's a day off, and you'll find people wandering around the big cities. But in places like this, I think they just shut themselves inside and take the opportunity to have a snooze, perhaps watch the TV. Because it is really, really quiet, and there are obviously no trucks on the road, which is really good. The French, again, one of the great things that the French still do is respect their bank holidays. And you go to a big town, big city, and you will find most of the shops are still closed. In Illiers-Cambrai, okay, it's a smaller town, but there was only one guy had his restaurant open, and then the chap who I bought my gourmet lunch of some fake Pringles and some cake from, and his rudimentary supermarket was still open. But apart from that, everything else was closed. So that's where we are. It is harvest time. I've seen that this morning. They are literally making hay while the sun shines. So that's where we are at 2 o'clock on Thursday, the 14th of July, 2022. I've still got another 15-20 kilometers to go to my final destination. I can't remember the name of that, but there's hopefully a municipal campsite there where I'm going to be staying overnight. Bon retour chez vous.
Merci beaucoup. Bonne route, bon voyage.
Merci. It's just before 8 a.m. on Friday the 15th, and I am in what could become in future years a dystopian campsite. It's been abandoned, basically, by the council. The echo is from the insides of the toilet block. If I move outside, everything is still here. All the pictures, the hedges, the lighting goes on at night, even the electricity is switched on. But this campsite has been, to all intents and purposes, apart from if you're a cyclist or a walker, shut down. Nobody works here. There are a few cages that they've installed where you can put your bike if you want to lock it up securely. Last night there was myself, the people on the pitch next to me, a family of four who were returning to Paris or near Paris after having cycled the Vélo Seine in both directions. A couple of tents down in the other direction, on the other side of the wash block, and three lads who were bike packing, and they turned up quite late last night. But I'm glad I wasn't here by myself. This would have been a creepy place to spend the evening. It's called Camping de Vienne, and it's in a town that I keep forgetting the name of because it's such a strange name. It is Nogent-le-Rotrou. So if you're into your dystopian campsites, come back here. Well, every year it will get even a bit more dystopian, so wait until next year or the year after and nature will have taken over. It's now just past 10 o'clock in the morning, and I found the voie verte that I'm going to be following for the rest of the day, all the way to Alençon. Bonjour. A few cyclists out, as you can hear. Now, the voie verte, as I say, it should be something that I'll follow for the rest of the day. As I look in front of me, all I can see is a long, line of trees on either side, an arcade if you like, arched together at the top, provides fantastic shade on a sunny day like today. It's called the Voie Verte Alençon Condé sur Wisney. Wisney, spelt H-U-I-S-N-E, that's the name of the river that flows in the valley, and presumably this route just follows that valley all the way to Alençon. 65 kilometres it said right at the start. There was a sign. That's actually quite nice. I've sometimes found it frustrating not knowing exactly how far I'm going to cycle. I kind of had my destination in mind. I found my campsite or where I'd like to stop, but then it's not until the mid, perhaps even late afternoon, that I find a sign that says how long I've got to cycle to get there. Now this is a cracking cycle route, and something that I forgot to mention yesterday when I was in Illiers-Cambrai, there are lots of cycle routes around here, and this is why that IGN map, if you follow the website, I mentioned it a while back and I bought a copy and I've got it with me now. If you spread it out, it's a map of France and it has all the different routes that you could possibly follow. Now I'm going to be following some of the bigger ones over the course of the next few weeks. Avenue Verte, Vélo Seine, Vélo d'Isère, for example. But there are lots and lots of other routes as well. Bonjour. Cycle tourist, well laden, just past me. And when I was in Illiers-Cambrai yesterday, they made a big thing about the fact that it was the crossing point for three routes. The first was obviously the Vélo Seine, the other one was the Loire cycle route. Now be careful, that's Loire without an E. There are two Loires in France, one's male, one's female. So this is the Loire, which I think is north of the other, La Loire, the bigger one, which is of course the Eurovélo 6. And it's also the crossing point for, and I'd never heard of this one before, obviously I'd heard of the pilgrimage routes to Santiago, but there's a cycle route that goes through France, and that crossed Illiers-Cambrai as well. So a real crossroads when it comes to different cycle routes. Right, momentarily the trees have disappeared. Now the wind, I can certainly feel the wind. Perhaps on the right hand side of me, which is good because I'm now heading predominantly northwest, and I'm hoping that the wind has changed according to the forecast. And it's now coming from the northeast rather than the northwest. That's not perfect, but it's a darn sight easier than me cycling to the northwest and the wind coming from the northwest, which was the case yesterday. I'm standing outside a big wooden building, and outside it says Espace Muséographique Régional, l'histoire du cyclisme. So basically it's a bicycle museum. A few bikes outside, including mine now. I think I'm the only person here. Let's go and have a look. Et pourquoi est-ce qu'il y a un musée ici dans la ville?
Alors, c'est un passionné qui était de la région.
Ouais.
Qui a commencé à collectionner, puis un jour la mairie lui a dit bah, faites un musée. Ah. Et puis du coup, c'est devenu un musée avec tout ce qu'il a pu récupérer.
Et c'est, ça existe depuis combien de temps?
22 ans.
Ah, là. Ouais. Ok.
Vous voulez peut-être un manuel en anglais pour l'intérieur ou...
Non, c'est bon, je peux.
C'est bon?
Oui, je peux.
D'accord.
Heureusement, comprendre en français.
D'accord.
Ok, je peux passer.
Oui, oui, allez-y.
Ok, merci.
Alors, il fait un peu noir parce que l'électricien doit revenir.
Ok. Ok, pas de problème, merci.
Bonne visite.
Merci. Well, I don't know if you caught all that, but she said it was created because there was somebody in the town who was a passionate bike person, and the town hall decided to give them some money to set up the museum, and it's been here for 22 years. She said it's a bit dark inside, and it is, because the electrician hasn't come yet to mend the lights, but I can still see the exhibits. So we've got some bikes here from 1892, 1888, 1893. Don't look that dissimilar to what you might be cycling today. Although those tyres, not very comfortable. So that's 1868 to 1902. Moving on. Les Grandes Routiers, it says. Oh, right, okay. Right. This is where I could do with a bit more light, because God, I can't see a damn thing. Three more bikes. This time associated with the presumably the Tour de France. Ah, we've got some posters. Elle est populaire sur toutes les routes de France. La bicyclette Christophe. Where are we now? We've moved on and we're in the Les Français de la Route. So presumably the golden age of Frenchmen winning the Tour de France. They've had a bit of a lean patch ever since. God, there's a jumper there. Wunder Dunlop from 1927. That looks so uncomfortable. That'll get you scratching within seconds. These old bicycles, Alcyon, Velo Alcyon. In fact, if anybody listened to that podcast I made about Maximilian J. St. George, I think he had an Alcyon. A bit earlier than that one, that's 1929. But these are bikes that, in order to change gears, you had to flip the back wheel round. Still a bit dark, so I can't see whether they're of that type. Ooh. These bikes are a bit more colourful. We've got a kind of a deep pink one there. We've got a green one. And we've got a grey one. Anyway, these are presumably all Eddie Merckx's bikes. 72, 78. They're still antiques though. They still look very old. Well, they are very old, aren't they? 45, well, 50 years old for 1972. Festina, right, they were big sponsors until the big drug scandals. Festina, I remember when I was living here in the 1990s, Festina was on the news practically every night. More drug scandals associated with that particular team, now defunct, I would imagine, or certainly now created into another team. Ah, right. Right, we've come into a much bigger space now, and there's actually in front of me a bike which has got panniers on it. It's got two panniers on the back, two panniers on the front, a pannier on the handlebar, a lookalike Brooks saddle. It's not a Brooks saddle, but it looks just like one. I wonder what that's doing here. Is that to do with the Tour de France? Is that from when they had to carry all their own stuff? Let's see what it says. Vélo de cyclotourisme sur mesure. Singer, année 1960. So that is actually a cycle tourism, a cycle touring we would call, the cycle touring bike, a Singer from the 1960s. Wow. Interesting. I mean, not radically different to what, well, I'm riding today, apart from the fact that, well, mine is radically different, with its carbon belt and its roll-off hub and its dynamo hub and its waterproof panniers, but, you know, apart from that, basically the same bike. And on the board, on the wall, there's all the names of... Ah, Lance Armstrong is here. They haven't scrubbed him out. Is he the last one mentioned? Richard Virenque, sorry. I remember him, he was part of that Festina scandal back in the 1980s. I wonder what he's doing now. He's probably a PE teacher in some Parisian suburb. Ce vélo a fait le tour de l'Europe en 1950. This bike did a tour of Europe in 1950. Remarquez le graisseur de chêne roulant. Make a note of the graisseur de chêne roulant. There's something rolling chain. Can't see what that refers to. The greaser of the train. There's something down there. Perhaps there was an automatic system for greasing the chain. How bizarre. Only two panniers and a front pannier on that one. Obviously channeling bike packing before it was even invented. Oh, a few books there. Much to their shame, they haven't got a copy of any of my books, but anyway, I'll let them off. That was a nice way to start the day, with a coffee and then buying some fruit in the market. I didn't manage to buy my croissant pain au chocolat, however, and I'm not sure now if I'm going to get the chance, because I've refound the Voie Verte, the Greenway, the disused railway line, and it's the bit between Alençon, where obviously I spent last night, and Bagnoles de l'Orne. Now that's not my destination. My destination is a little bit further at a place called Domfront-en-Poiré, because there's a compi municipal there, and David Naylor on Twitter, he described it as a gem. So I'm not wanting to miss that. That's my destination. But I do have a choice. In Alençon, you can either continue to take the Greenway, the disused railway line, which is described, this is the translation on the board in front of me. It says, this safe and easy, family-friendly option takes you through vast, unspoilt natural settings such as Sartan Valley, etc. But it does go by the Mont des Avaloises, which apparently is the highest point in northwestern France. It doesn't go up there, but it goes past it. That's crucial. That's one alternative. The second alternative is to stick to the road. And it says, this is definitely the most challenging part of the Vélo Scénique route. It leads you along rolling little roads around Butte, Showmore Hill, etc., etc. Basically, what they're saying is, if you want the easy option, take the Voie Vert. If you want a more challenging option, where you're going up and down hills, then take the on-road option. Guess which one I'm going to go for. I'm afraid I'm going to stick to the Voie Verte. If I have the energy, perhaps when I get to the Mont des Avaloises, you can go up it apparently, and there's a good viewpoint up there, but we'll see when I get there whether I've got the energy to do that. Breaking news, it's required me to leave the Voie Verte, which I was kind of forced into doing anyway because there was a blockage by the main road. Coming to a little town called Saint-Denis, little village, and hurrah, I finally had my breakfast about 10, half past 10, courtesy of the Boulangerie Pâtisserie Artisan de Saint-Denis. Couple of bike packers there just going past. Now the railway line today, the disused railway line, is actually very different to the one from yesterday. Yesterday it was pretty flat, but today it's actually just been, well, for the first 20-25 kilometers it was steady uphill, and it reached its summit a few kilometers back, and now I'm just freewheeling very slowly back down the hill. And I'm just hoping it goes on for quite a while, because it can get quite tiring when you're just constantly climbing at more or less the same rate without any opportunity to flatten off and to rest. You do feel as though there's a lot more wildlife around here. I had a wild boar scuttling in front of me earlier in the morning, dragonflies, red squirrel, saw one of those, plus all the birds and insects that you normally see. The other thing that's changed is the scenery. It's a lot hillier, which obviously matches with the railway having to climb a hill and then come down the other side. They're not massive hills, we're not talking the Alps, this is northwest France. And it was difficult to, I think I mentioned that highest point in northwest France earlier, it was difficult to actually determine where that was. It wasn't obvious, it wasn't just a hill sticking up above the others. Well, I certainly didn't spot it. Perhaps it was there lurking behind the trees at a moment when I wasn't listening, or rather watching. Not sure you can hear mountains. Just stumbled across a place called Bagnoles-sur-Lorne. Well, I say stumbled across, it was on the map all along, and I envisaged spending a few minutes here just over lunch, but actually it's very different to what I imagined. It's a spa resort, and it's like nothing else in the area. It's very out of place, very swish, white buildings, flags around the lake. These places are very popular with the French still. I suppose we tend to think of spa resorts as having their heyday back in the 19th, early 20th century, when people went there to drink the waters. I get the impression, after having travelled around France, not just this summer, but in previous summers, you do stumble across these places, and they're still active medicinal places with institutes and hotels where you can get special treatments, and just cycling into the main part of the town just now, I've passed people who are on crutches, people who don't look well, people with chronic sneezing, a chap who just walked past me, whether he just had a cold or whether it was a chronic condition, I don't know. But yeah, a curious place, not something you would expect to find in northwest France, in Normandy.
Bonjour.
peut rester la nuit ici?
Oui.
Excellent, merci. Oh, bonjour.
Votre nom, famille?
C'est Sykes, S-Y-K-E-S.
Prénom?
Andrew, A-N-D-R-E-W.
Vous êtes anglais?
Oui, c'est ça.
Okay. Ouais. We can talk in English if you want.
Yeah, you sound very English.
Because I am.
Oh, right, well. Hence your sign outside which says English spoken.
So I'll make €4, please.
Four. Is that
four.
All?
Yeah.
Goodness, that's cheap even for a municipal campsite.
Yeah, because you don't have electricity.
No.
You're just one person and one space. One pitch.
Okay. Right, well, I won't pay you with my card then, I'll pay you with cash.
It's okay, you can pay with a card or cash.
€4?
Yeah.
That's impressive. The cheapest I've ever stayed is €6.
Oh yeah?
And that was 7 years ago. So you, wow. I'm going to frame that.
Would you like the bill?
No, thank you. €4, that is difficult to beat. In fact, I would say that is impossible to beat. €4 for a night of camping on a really good municipal campsite in not just any old town but in Domfront, which is a beautiful hilltop town here in Normandy. I'm almost thinking they've got their prices wrong, because €4, well, the best I've ever experienced was €6, and that was back in 2015. But €4, F-O-U-R, €4, my God, that is astounding. In fact, after I put the tent up, I went into town, had a couple of beers, and within an hour, I'd spent three times that amount on two beers, which kind of just says it all. I'm almost tempted to say they should put their prices up. But anyway, it's clearly working, because it is very, very popular with cycle tourists. I'm just looking around me now. There's three guys just turned up, bike packers. They're literally just getting the panniers off their bikes. There's another guy to the left with a bike, bigger tent. Surely he didn't get that on the bike. One, two, three, four tents there with bikes. Another one, two, three, four. Another six tents, including mine. One with two people in it, another one, two, at least another two tents over on the right-hand side. So we're talking, you know, a dozen more tents here of people who are cycle camping. Now, it's a great location. It's on the route of the Vélo Cenis. But, you know, what was it Kevin Costner said in that film? If you build it, they will come. I was up and out of the campsite very early this morning, 7:30, and then made my way back into the centre of Domfront, where I was last night. It's a beautiful little hilltop town, very well maintained, preserved. There's a little ruined castle there. Very, very nice. Didn't really expect to find that kind of thing in this part of France. It's more something that you expect to find in southern France. Anyway, back on the cycle track, back on the disused railway line, and it looks to me as though this is potentially going to continue for much of the day to Mont Saint-Michel. On my map, between Domfront and Mont Saint-Michel, apart from a little section at the end, most of it is marked green. It is. I'm going to hesitate before making a negative comment, but because it's a, it is a good place to cycle, and it's a very good cycle route. Ticks many boxes, but being on the railway track so much can be a bit relentless. Sometimes you could just do with a little bit more variety. But I dare say, if I was cycling in an area where every 2 minutes it changed, then I would be probably desperate for a bit of nice, regular, good surface, flattish cycling. So you can't have it all, can you? Well, rarely. Right, I've just passed the sign. It said 53 kilometres to Mont Saint-Michel. I would imagine there'll be a lunch break at, I don't know, looking at my map, Morten, Saint-Hilaire-du-Harcouët, perhaps one of those two places. Mont Saint-Michel by mid to late afternoon. I've got off the bike because I've arrived at a bit of a crossroads. Well, it's more of a T-junction, because it's the point where the Vélo Seine, which is the one I'm following in the direction of Mont Saint-Michel, 49 kilometres, that's what it says on the sign. 49, still 49. Oh, anyway, and meeting it at this point is the Eurovélo 4, also known in France as the Vélo Maritime, because when it gets to, well, the top of Normandy, when it gets to kind of, does it get to Cherbourg, I think? It just basically becomes a lot less maritime, and it heads through the centre of Normandy. And this is the point where it meets the Vélo Seine. So basically from this point onwards, between now and Mont Saint-Michel, I'm not just following the Vélo Seine, I'm also back on the Eurovélo 4 and the Vélo Maritime that I was following when I first arrived in France a couple of weeks ago.
Bonjour.
And those three guys have just arrived from the direction of the Eurovélo 4, Vélo Maritime, and have turned right, which is where I'm about to set off again in the direction of Mont Saint-Michel. 49 kilometres, really? I've only gone 10 kilometres since it said 59. Whoa, anyway, onwards. It's just past 11 on Monday the 18th of July, and I'm standing in the beautiful gardens of the mairie, the town hall of a little village called Roz-sur-Couzenon. It's just up the hill from the campsite where I'm staying, which is called Compine-les-Couzenon, and I managed to get to Mont Saint-Michel yesterday afternoon. The end of the greenway, thank you. There's a group of children having a horse riding lesson just on the other side of the park. Clearly that horse approves. The greenway finished yesterday rather abruptly and comically at a point where it kind of dropped off, and then on the other side of the road you could see the old bridge that used to take the railway into the centre of the town which is nearest to Mont Saint-Michel itself. At that point, obviously, the route got deviated, and it was actually quite a long cycle. It was about 10 kilometres around the bay of Mont Saint-Michel before you actually got to the mount itself. And some parts of the route actually, again, it looks like a work in progress. Some parts you couldn't take, but it was a really nice ride, albeit in the blazing hot sunshine of yesterday afternoon, especially after having come out from the greenway the greenway, which was nice and protected by the trees. But anyway, got to Mont Saint-Michel. You can cycle on there. Somebody told me a couple of days ago that it was a COVID measure that was introduced, that you could cycle to Mont Saint-Michel. Previously you couldn't along the bridge, but you could. Indeed, there's a big bike parking place just to the side of the entrance. Now, as all big tourist attractions, not just in France but anywhere around the world, it was heaving with people on a hot summer's day. I'd been there before, in fact I've been twice before, once with some friends and once with a school group a few years ago, so I didn't need to get to the top of the mount, and I didn't. It was just too heaving with people. People sitting on steps, oh, awful. Anyway, that's life in a big tourist attraction, I suppose. And hey, I'm a tourist, so I can't complain. I was one of the people creating all that noise and all that hustle and bustle. Anyway, didn't stay there too long. Tim Sanders, a friend from the Cycle Touring Festival, he recommended a campsite not too far from Mont Saint-Michel, and I gave them a call in the afternoon because I tried to book on their website and it said full. Gave them a ring, they said, yeah, no problem. Turned up. What a fantastic little campsite it is. It's called Compine Les Cousnons, and it is perhaps 6-7 kilometres from Mont Saint-Michel itself, but they've gone out of their way to facilitate, to help, to accommodate not just people on bikes but also people who are walking. There are quite a few walkers on the site this morning, and we're actually going to hear from one of the cyclists that I bumped into this morning in a few minutes, right at the end of the podcast. So that's it. I've got to Mont Saint-Michel, the end of the Vélo Seine. It's a good route, far more greenway, far more disused railway line than I imagined. And if you're into your variety, well, perhaps it might not be for you. But when it's hot and sunny like it has been in the last few days, I think it's a great place to cycle. And I was particularly grateful of those trees giving me the cover yesterday when it was very, very, very hot. Now, today I'm not cycling. I've decided to take a day off. Yes, it's to do with the fact that it's potentially going to be 41, 42 degrees in the sunshine. Don't fancy cycling in that. So I'm staying 2 nights on that fantastic campsite, and I'm going to spend today just relaxing, recuperating, catching up on a few bits of admin, and obviously making sure that this podcast episode is published. I have to say, I think I've probably got the best podcast studio in the world, because what I didn't say is that this little village of, if I remember its name, Rose-les-Cousnons, that's it, is on the top of a little hill. Not a very big hill, but bearing in mind this is all flat land round here, if you go up a hill you get a fantastic panoramic view. And the fantastic panoramic view that I've got is one of Mont Saint-Michel in the distance. An amazing place just to spend a couple of hours catching up on your admin. I reckon it's the best podcast studio in the world. Well, perhaps. Anyway, so that's been episode 54 of the Cycling Europe podcast. Again, great little route, the Vélo Seine. There's more to come in weeks to come. I'm now going to head off west in the direction of potentially Roscoff, and then down the Vélo Seine on the west coast of France. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you want to get in contact, you can do so. All the details are at cyclingeurope.org/contact. If you'd like to support the website or the podcast, you can do so by going to cyclingeurope.org/support. Not sure when the next episode of the podcast will be. It might be when I get to Roscoff. It might be when I am a little bit down the Vélo Seine in Brittany. I don't know. Depends what happens between now and then, I suppose. But watch out for that in the next week or so. Can't guarantee a particular date or time. Now, I did mention a few minutes ago that I had a little chat this morning with somebody, a French cyclist, who had just come from the direction in which I'm about to set off in tomorrow. Now, at the time, he was eating his breakfast from a paper bag, so the rustling and crackling that you hear is not technical. It's merely him eating his breakfast as I chatted to him. And he talks about a little bit about the route and where he's been and what he thought about it. So until the next time, until episode 55 of the Cycling Europe podcast, thank you for listening and happy cycling. Are you British?
No. Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from France.
Ah, okay. Just that I noticed you had a...
Yes.
A ridgeback
bike. Ridgeback, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I bought it 2 years ago, before the Brexit. Uh-huh. And they make a discount.
Ah, okay.
Because of the Brexit.
I used to have a ridgeback panorama.
So that's...
I used to have a ridgeback panorama.
A panorama? No, I don't know this one.
Yeah.
You,
au revoir.
You had a panorama bike?
Uh-huh, yeah. It was a good bike.
It's like this one for... Yes.
And they're very popular in the UK. Ridgeback bikes.
Yeah. It's very good. I'm not disappointed. I have no problem with him for the moment, for 2 years, so it's okay.
And where are you going?
I have finished... I came from Saint-Brieuc in Brittany.
Ah, okay.
And it was my last step to Mont-Saint-Michel yesterday.
So were you following the Vélo Maritime?
Yes, it was Vélo Maritime, yes.
Because I'm going in that direction tomorrow.
Okay, so in the other side, the other way. Okay.
So what's it like, the route?
No, really, it's really good. But for today, if you are going to Saint-Malo today, there is not a lot of trees to Saint-Malo. You follow the sea, so it's okay, it's really good. But with the heat and with the sun, it's not the best place for the moment.
Okay.
But it's really good to see. And after, when you will go around Saint-Brieuc, we have what we name in France Côte d'Emeraude. And it is really great. It is some côte with some... how do you name it? Some falls, but falaise?
Cliffs.
Cliffs, yes. It's really great.
Okay. Is it quite hilly?
Not so much. I don't know what you name hilly, but maybe it's 100 meters from uphill, I think, but no, it's not so much. When it is hilly, it lasts maybe 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay.
Not so long.
And how many days did it take you to get to Saint-Brieuc?
I started...
to get here, sorry.
Thursday night, so around 3-4 days.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not so difficult. And I really take my time because of the heat, so...
Uh-huh.
From here to Saint-Brieuc, I think it's around 150 kilometers.
Okay. And you're finished now? You're going home?
Yes, I take my train in the afternoon.
Okay.
And you, so you are going with my team until which city?
Well, I'm until hopefully
Morlaix,
just to the south of.